Now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Mandy. Hi, I'm Mandy, and I am definitely an alcoholic.
Hi, Mandy.
Hi.
There you go, dear.
He set this down. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
You're going to hear me regardless, so. Oh, I'm so glad to see all your faces. I was just sitting up there thinking that who would have ever thought I would have been this 41-year-old woman coming to a meeting with a bunch of alcoholics that I all adore, and how much influence it's made my life and how blessed each day I feel I have. As a lot of you know, I have a lot of good friends here. I have some sponsees here. I still trip out on it sometimes, but I just go right back into gratitude. You know, I grew up in Lemoore. I lived in Visalia throughout college, but I grew up in Lemoore. I grew up in a really good home. I had a mom and dad that were wonderful people. My mom and dad, before I lost my dad, had celebrated 40 years. They raised just me and my big brother, Bobby, and they always thought Bobby was going to be the harder one. And it's not that he had some stuff he had to walk through and learn about, but he's a good guy, and he did college and stayed out of trouble, but I was the one that saved the best for last. I was the challenging one, and it wasn't so much through school, it was more towards the end of high school and college. When I grew up in Lemoore, we all kind of knew each other, all of our families knew each other, we all played sports together, we all went to school together. I actually ended up going to a private school because they had good education, and my parents had to work really hard to put us there because it wasn't cheap. So I was always really good. You guys will laugh at this because you'll totally see it if you know me. My first day of school at King's Christian was in first grade, and I had to go to the blue room, which they call. It's the principal's office. But I wasn't in trouble. You get these cards pulled. It goes green, then yellow, then red. And I was like, I wasn't mean, but I talked too much. And I wouldn't be quiet, so I had to go sit in the blue room for about a half an hour. I guess I thought I had a lot to say back then that was important. But, I did, but I just needed to do it at the right time. I had a really good school, and I have a lot of good memories there. At that school, I got to go on field trips. I got to go to Washington, D.C. I got to learn a lot. And I was ahead a little bit. But school wasn't very significant. I mean, it was, but I was more like, I want to play sports, so I had to keep my grades up. And it was so that King's Christian was, I was doing in fourth grade what a lot of the eighth graders at P.W. Ingvall were doing, and that's a public school. So, it was a little stressful, and as a youngster, I grew up in a good home, but as a lot of you know, I've talked about, my dad was a salesman and a driver for Coors Light. So we had the typical pool light over the table, over the TV, Coors Light, Rocky Mountain brew, whatever, and my dad had, the garage was the, I guess, like the man cave, but everyone hung out there. The boats were in there, all the toys my dad had, and the two extra refrigerators, and I remember always getting my dad and his friends that would come by, or his brothers, go grab Papa a beer, and it'd be like a Coors Light, and I'd be like, okay, and I remember, I think the first time that I snuck a beer, I was 7 years old. And people were home, but I think they were sleeping, and so I don't know how I got away with it. I think about it now, but I remember drinking half of it, and I didn't like it, but I didn't want to waste it or get caught. It wasn't even wasting it. I didn't want it to get caught, so I had to, hide the evidence, so I slammed the rest, went next door, and threw it in the neighbor's trash. But I remember it because I carried it for so long, that conscience of it, like I was guilty. I never got caught. When I started to get caught was when I was in high school, and it was SAT week, and there was a group of us girls. We were at King's Christian, so we had like an eighth grader, three freshmen, a sophomore, and my senior friend Candy, whose boyfriend got us the beer. Well, actually, we got wine coolers and beer. And we thought, we don't have to be at school till 10, it's SATs. So we slammed, and none of us drank. So we slammed like two wine coolers and a couple beers, and we were tipsy. And I'd never been tipsy. And I don't want to see my SAT scores that year, because if I would have been at any other school, they would have put me in special ed. All of us. Because I remember doing the dots, and I thought, oh, this will be a cute picture. And I was doing a picture, and Oh, God. But anyways, so we got in trouble for that. It was the first time I ever got in trouble at school, and I got, all of us girls got caught, and we got suspended, and I thought, man, a lot of these parents and a lot of these schools, some of these school teachers, not all of them, they're real, they shamed us. And it wasn't in the normal way like my parents do. It was kind of like those are the bad kids. So, you know, my sophomore year, we all left. We all went to Lemoore High, and my girlfriend Candy graduated. It was kind of funny, and I shouldn't say this, but, you know, we always talk about karma. The following year, the whole rest of the high school that shamed, that embarrassed us and their parents, they all got in trouble, not just for drinking, but for smoking some illegal stuff at the camp they went to. So I was like, that's too bad. I wonder what their parents are saying. But my mom said something about it. But anyways, you can't be like that, but you know, it's back there. So in high school, I did pretty good. I had a lot of friends, and I, you know, we partied, the typical field parties. We're going to get a kegger. We always have connections. You know, you're kind of, in Lemoore, a lot of us were related. There's a lot of Portuguese there. So we always have big brothers and cousins and uncles that were the young uncle that would hook us up. And so we had, like, even our party spots, like Fiesta Forest, the Endo. That was the end of Hanford Armona Road, way out in the country. And so that was a party spot. Jackson's Tracks. We all had them. So whenever we got popped, I found out years later where our beer all went. The firemen partied with it on the fireman night, which is Tuesday night in Lemoore. They kept most of that. I came across it when I did community service years later. But so that's what we did. But I was usually pretty good. The only time I got in trouble one time, I actually wasn't even drinking that night, but we did get in trouble. I was pulled over with a crew of us, and I wasn't driving, but I was in a Jeep, and we had it in neutral, and the guys got out, and a couple of us girls waited in the car, and I just moved over to sit in the driver's seat, and because the engine was on, even though it was in neutral, there were some open containers. And so I'm the one that was behind the wheel. Nobody else got in trouble, so that was my first minor. So yeah, I mean, I know those were consequences, but when you're 16 or 17 and you know you didn't drink, it's not really that serious. I got in trouble, I got grounded, but, you know, I told them I really wasn't drinking that night, and I really wasn't. But the whole scene was just wrong. We used to drink and drive, and there was only a couple times I drove drunk, but it shouldn't have never happened. And this is before I got out of high school. Now, after high school, I was off like a prom dress, and we were partying. I had a boyfriend that was I cared about him, but I was crazy, and I cared for him, but I didn't, like, I was not afraid of anything, but I was afraid of, you know, being intimate. I wasn't ready for any of that stuff. My friends all did, but I was like, I'm not. So he cheated on me, so I drop-kicked him, and then I just threw my middle finger up and said, let's roll, and we all partied, and, you know, that's your ego. And so I moved in with some girls. First, I lived behind my grandmother. She had this little house, we called it the Love Shack. Don't ask me why, it was just a nick. My grandma would rent it out. My grandma and grandpa, the Portuguese, the Machados, would rent it out. And so it was like a shack. It was like a living room, a little kitchen, a little front porch area, and that was it. So I was like, that lasted 2 months, mind you, because my grandmother's like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And so I was like, yeah, you're right. And so I moved to Hanford, and that's where I kind of, like, we call Hanford H-bomb, and there's a reason for it. But that's where I got into my own trouble, a lot more trouble. That's not just when I drank. That's when I started doing other substances. And I never did it when people would try to get me to do it. I did it because I was curious. And I okayed it because I did it on my time, and I did it when nobody knew. And that's when I tried speed. And I think about it now, and I think about one of the types of speed I tried 3 times to make sure I didn't like it. I mean, that's normal and all, right? And so, and I said I would never, ever do certain stuff that I did. And it was to the point where if I wasn't drinking in the morning, I was smoking a bowl. And if I hadn't been up for a few days because of the other stuff, you know, I was switching, as they say, from scotch to brandy. And I did that, and it became a daily thing. So when I got into a relationship too, with a guy that was a good guy, but he had his own issues too, and it just became a very unhealthy, chaotic relationship. And it was the type of relationship that I've never been raised around. My parents were my savings grace. They were what you look up to. They weren't holy rollers. They were just a Portuguese, Italian, down-home folks that loved you hard, gave you tough love. But I think because I'm an addict now, I can look back. I got off on the difference, like the, you know, just the craziness of it all. And it was just not healthy at all. So we were off and on, and I was partying harder, and my first DUI, I got to go to the good old drunk tank of Kings County. I had been at my brother's house, and I had a bottle of Strawberry Hill, just champagne, you know, that's typical, 1996, and it was cheap. We did that, or Mickey's Big Mouth. Those were 99 cents for a 22 ounce. I remember those days too. And but I thought I was fine because I was regularly intoxicated by this point. I woke up in the morning and I had bowls, and it wasn't Lucky Charms. I've told you guys this one. It was the chronic, and I thought that was okay. That's how quick this disease can happen. But I drove home. Well, I was going to drive home in Hanford, and I had my friend with me, and luckily they didn't impound my car, but I was arrested for, I got pulled over for speeding on 10th Avenue. But I got arrested because he knew I was intoxicated. And so I got to take those beautiful pictures you get front, side. And I still have that picture at home. It's in one of my files. It's ridiculous. You can tell I've been crying because I was like, please, officer, please, my dad's going to kick my ass. Please, I didn't want to get caught. It wasn't about feeling guilty. I just didn't want to get caught. So I got to go to the drunk tank, and I remember walking in. It was like a Wednesday, and I walked down, and you go by the county, some of the people have just been arrested, and there are guys and girls hooting and hollering at me, and I'm like, okay, what is going on? And then they took me to this other room, and when they open it, I see pink elephants on the wall. They look like Dumbo. I see like these Disney characters, and then I don't see a toilet, I see a hole in the, and nobody else is in there. And so I'm like, it's still fairly early, maybe like 10, 11, I don't know, it's been a while. And so I got to go to sleep. I used toilet paper as my pillow, and luckily because I was alone, they gave me a blanket. And then I was, they let me go about 6 hours later. Like I said, my car wasn't impounded, so my friend Naomi got to take it, and she picked me up. So what's the first thing I do? I get in the car and say, you got a joint? This was a lot of stress I just went through. I need one. So, of course, she has one. So we're on my way back to my house in Visalia. I was already living in Visalia, I think. And what was I in Hanford? I don't know. I was all over the place at that point. And I went home. I did not call my parents. I didn't tell anyone. And I guess at that point, my license was already like right then, immediately, like you don't have it. And so, I didn't know that. So I kept driving. Didn't tell my parents. About 3 weeks later, I was at a party. Went with a whole bunch of my friends. Walked into the garage before I walked in. It was a house party. And I was hungry. I had smoked some stuff, and so I got a little appetite. And so I walked in there, and I was eating, and some girl came at me sideways, and my defense and my ego basically got in the way, and I clocked her. And the next thing you know, the cops came, and it was just, I felt guilty like it was my fault because I just responded, I should not have done that. And I remember, I always mention this, and I always say I mention this, but there was another guy that, I got a minor, and there's another guy that got arrested that night. His name was Brandon. He's another little Portuguese. He was drunk. And he was funny drunk. He was like, call my lawyer, you pigs. And he threw a softball at the cop car. And so, of course, he's arrested. And he went and graduated to other substances, and he ended up going to Fresno State. And when he was in Fresno State, he got into other substances, and he was just not doing good. And he ended up blowing his head off in front of his whole fraternity. And so that was like, when I heard that a few years later, I just thought, it was just, we were the only ones that got in trouble. It was just real close to home for me. But anyway, so that night, I, of course, didn't tell my parents about that either. And finally, I told my parents, I didn't tell them. They found out I lost my license because the insurance bill came in. And I was like, okay, so they said, give us the keys. You know how to get into trouble. You know how to find ways to school. You'll handle it. If you have to walk, walk. And I was living in my city. I was like, fine. So I still have, I went to court and it was misdemeanor still, but they pushed it off for another day. So the New Year's came and I ended up going to Pismo. I was invited to go to Europe. Passed up on that because the tickets went from 500 to 1,000. And then I was supposed to be in Lake Tahoe with my friend and her family and a whole bunch of us girls. And I just said, you know, I'm going to go to the coast with my friend Rachel. And so we went to the coast, hung out there, came back. January 3rd comes around. I was at my boyfriend's house with his family. Later that night, I decided to go road tripping with my friend Rachel. We were fine. We just got a few beers. Of course, you know, I was still smoking out every day. So that was just like a regular thing. We ended up going to a guy friend of ours. And once I said, let me use your car real quick. And I was like, she's like, well, I don't know. Your mom and dad said no more driving. And I just said, I'm just going to go pick up my boyfriend and we'll be right back. And she's like, all right. So I don't remember any of this. This is all what's been told to me because I lost memory of all that. But I kind of remember that day a little bit, but not really. It's like pieces. And I was out in the country and I got to 9¼ and it had been raining throughout the whole valley. In fact, my grandfather was in the San Joaquin area and he was evacuated. My mom had been trying to get a hold of me all day, and she left some messages, and she wasn't very nice. And I guess I ran a stop sign on 9¼, and a car hit me going about 55-60. And I was the one hurt bad, thank God, because I rolled. Not that I'm glad I got hurt, but if I would hurt people the way I was hurt, I don't know if I would have been able to live with myself. The car completely rolled, flipped, everything, and it came to an abrupt halt by a big water well. And so by the time the cops got there, they had covered me. And a man showed up, and he was on the scene, and he was my old landlord, and he's one who I got into it with before I moved out of Hanford. And he almost got arrested, and he said, she's not dead. His name's Ken Johnson, and he's one of my angels. They had to cut me out of my clothes. They had to cut me out of the car. They had to use the jaws of life. I was really bad. You could see my brain. My eye was still connected, but it wasn't where it was supposed to be. I had a lot of compound fractures, and the other people, one of them fractured a wrist or an ankle, and one was a wrist, one was an ankle, but they went home that night, thank God. But they took me to Hanford, and my cousin, who's a nurse, had a friend there. And so my cousin's like, what's going on? They're like, they have to airlift her. They can't handle her here. She's like a scary movie. There's blood. She's lost 6 pints already. We can't. So they're taking her to UMC. And it was very traumatic for my family. And my brother, I guess, came bebopping in and goes, what'd Bubba do now? And when they told him, he just fell to the ground and he didn't talk for days. But they ended up airlifting me, and when they airlifted me, they gave me last rites. It's a prayer. It's a miracle prayer. About 5 times, and they didn't think I was going to make it on the helicopter ride, but I did. And so they started on my brain. They checked for internal bleeding. They did 12 hours on my brain. By the end of the first, 4 or 5 days, they did about 25 hours worth of surgery. I was put into a semi-coma because my brain was swollen. My face was bigger than a basketball. And they put a not a real bolted in halo. They thought I broke my neck, but they just couldn't tell. And they were focused on just trying to get me to survive and giving me the blood and broke my jaw, wired my mouth shut. I was really bad. They had to tummy tube me. And I ended up being on life support for about 17 days. And then I came to, and it was a long road. I ended up being in UMC for about a month, and then they took me to, they've merged actually UMC and Fresno Community together now, but they took me to Fresno Community. It's like a rehabilitation hospital. So I was there for almost another month, and I was in a wheelchair for like 5 months, but I had to go do every kind of therapy, not just mental, but I had to do physical, I had to do occupational, I had to learn how to use my hand, I talked like this, I had a trach. But I talked. I still talked. I was like, yeah, what you gonna do? And it was sad, though, because my parents, I mean, one funny thing is my brother, I love my brother, Bobby. He's my only sibling. And being a little sister, you kind of adore him. But he used to be a little asshole. He would pin me down on the ground when I was a kid and do the spit and then pull it back up. And I'd be like, I would get so mad. And then sometimes he couldn't pull it back up. So his payback with me is I cough and cover my mouth, but it always came out my throat. Oh, God, I got him good. And he'd be like, Mom. And he gets, but that's just, my mom goes, yeah, that's what you get all these years later. But what is he going to do? He can't beat me up. He can't, you know, I already did that. So, you know, my family, thank God, they made the best. They never left the hospital. And I know it's all God first because that was... That love I had was a savings grace for me. So I ended up being in the hospital almost 2 months. I finally came home. I was still in a wheelchair. I was like, I weighed like 115, which is not good for a girl who's almost 6 foot. I had a long ways to go. I still was like Drew Barrymore in 51st States. I had a lot of short-term memory. I'd fall asleep. What happened? Where am I? I went through that whole process. But the thing is, I had more hope where my brain was starting to heal. So 6 months later, after my wreck, I have to go to court, and I ended up getting a lawyer. My parents had quite a few grand saved for my college education, but it was spent on my lawyer because of my choices, and they decided to take care of my last DUI because it went from a misdemeanor to a felony because of that law. So it was a strike, and I was looking at going to Chowchilla for at least 16 months. Because when you go to Superior Court, some of you guys may know this, I don't know. I had never been through this. I didn't have this huge record. I had a six-week record. And you get this interview, and the lady recommends what you do. And, I was a felon. I looked like the white girl, and perfect example. And so we also had an opportunity to get rid of one of the judges, and we did because we knew. And I'm not even going to say his name because it's recorded. But I got a really good judge, and I got a really good lawyer, but my lawyer was honest with me. He was afraid. He didn't know. So by the time the conviction day came, because you go to all these pretrials, I was 4 days before, and I remember I had to go to the doctor because my nerves were really shot, and I was finally walking. I was just barely off my walker. And my knees and my ankles started going out on me, and he said, it's your nerves. So, but I didn't want to use my walker when I had to go stand up and go. So I had my dad walk me, and he's like, just use it. I said, no, I can't. I have to face this. Like, I did this. I need to pay the consequences. I have to. And so by the grace of God, I ended up, the DA stood up for me. They look at your whole life. It's not just what you did. They look at your whole life from your childhood. They look at your family. And I ended up getting 5 years probation, house arrest for 6 months. I had to wear that gorgeous anklet. Lots of fines, thousands. Let's see, there's a 4-month program to an 18-month program at Kingsview. I had to do the 4-month because I was never going to drive again because I'm legally blind now. And community service, like I said, lots of hours. And then I had to go to AA. I had to go get autographs from all you beautiful people. And so we were very, very grateful. But we still had a ways to go because, you know, I was still healing. I had the brain, but it was a big relief off my parents. And it was hard. You know, I had to go to counseling after that. And as I was healing, I could leave the house for church and for counseling and for AA meetings. So I did those regularly anyways because I needed it. And my family did it too, the counseling. So I started going to meetings, and it was crazy because I walk into this room at the church I grew up in, and there happened to be a meeting there, and I see people I know, like some teachers my mom's worked with, my friend who I was supposed to be in Tahoe with's father. I didn't know they were alcoholics because they're normal functioning people. They'd been sober quite a while. I saw people that you could tell were kind of new. They didn't talk to anyone. They kind of hid. But I just remember walking in, and I just thought, So my mom was so sweet because she's the one that took me. And no one knew if I looked like the little girl, because my hair was still growing out. I was still doing the Donald Trump part, because luckily I have a lot of hair, but I looked like half Kramer and half Mandy, so I just parted it. And they just thought I was the sweetest daughter taking my mom to meetings. And my mom's like, bullshit. I love her, but she needs help. And I'm here to make sure she gets it, because she doesn't have the great, her brain activity is still coming too. She's got a ways to go. So I wasn't going to meetings, though, because I thought I had a problem. I was going because that's what the law told me to do. Eventually, I started back to school, and I went to college, and I was, you know, the odds weren't good for me, but I am very stubborn, and I'm still going to try to go back to college and finally get that education, because I dropped classes without ever dropping. So even when I went back to college, you're like, you're on probation. I go, how do you know? They're like, no, you're on probation with the school because you have, like, 3 F's. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to start one class at a time, because I'm like two-time Timmy. I got to build that back. And I did good. I started to do good. I did an English class. I got to write a lot. I still have everything I wrote. Essays, real life, funny. The first time I got my snow slope and swerve on, it was the first time I skied, and another one bites the dust. And I got to, it was some therapy for me on top of the counseling, but I started to run into some old friends. And some old faces, and then some old places, and before you know it, I didn't pick up on the alcohol first. I picked up on the illegal stuff you smoke, and within, like, after the sixth time, someone found out, called my brother, called my parents, and they said, no more. You can't do this. I felt guilty, and I cried. So there was this young girl at the program who was, like, 2 years older than me, but she had, like, 5 years. No, she had like, I don't know, maybe 3 years at the time. Her name was Sharon B. And she just looked like the girl next door. And I said, okay, can you be my sponsor? Because I think I might have a problem, at least with, marijuana. She's like, okay, we can try. And the steps work either way. And I was like, okay. So I started working the steps. I got to 3. I know about God. I've always believed in him. I mean, I took him for granted, but I always believed in him. But darn it, you know, I still got out in the world again. I started drinking. So it was kind of a high for me, because I was hiding it from my family, hiding it from my friends, going out to party with new people and old people. And within 6 months after that, I was right where I left off. I was doing things that I didn't remember. I was blacking out, starting to almost get into fist fights again, and just... I did what all of you guys talked about in those meetings. I picked up where I left off, and then I always laugh at this part, because I got so mad at you guys, because I thought those they set me up. I did what they said happened. They psyched me into that. This is not right, because I'm really not supposed to ever drink again, because I have metal in my head anyways. I can't even take certain medicines. I could have a seizure. And so I went to my sponsor, and I go, okay, I got to tell you something. And she's like, uh-huh. I said, I've been drinking. She's like, okay. And I was like, what? Did you know? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, how? And she's like, really, Mandy, you're going to go there? And I was like, okay, fine. And so I told my parents on my own. And I said, what do I do? And she's like, well, are you desperate? And I go, yeah. She goes, do you want to stay desperate? And I go, what do you mean? She's like, are you ready to really change your life? I said, yeah, I have to. I'm not going to make it. I said, I feel homicidal and suicidal already. And I said, and it's darker than it's ever been. And I don't have that right. There's still that seed of hope, you know, and then my family. And I love them. And some people say, oh, you have to do it for yourself. If that's what you think, that's fine. And sometimes that's what it works. But it was my family that made me really get that bottom, because I loved them so much. And I already broke their heart once, and I almost killed my dad because of it. His heart was broken up in the hospital a year and a half after my wreck from a massive heart attack. He would never say it to me, but you think I don't know? I know. So I did what she said. I did 90 meetings, 90 days. I got rides because I still haven't drove. I still haven't drove. It's 20 years. And I reached out to women every day, and not always the same ones that were in the program. I did writing all the time. And mind you, at this time, my grandfather's getting really, really sick. He was so smart. And he was sharp all the way till he died, but he had diabetes for years, but he ended up with gangrene. So when I wasn't busy with that, I was taking care of my grandpa. I was staying with him, and I managed to get, before he died, 4 months, and I stayed. And I did my steps, and I did them 1 through 12 in numerical order. And I finally started to believe maybe I can do this after, like, I hit my year. And I never have stopped meetings. I still go to meetings. But a lot of you guys know there was a challenge in my life, because as we talk about recovery, we talk about learning not to drink, but it's really about learning how to live life sober and just how to live. That's how I feel. Because, you know, as a little girl, when I hit puberty, we found out I had depression, and I had to learn to deal with that and accept it and know that it's treatable and I can be okay in today's world. I had to learn a lot of stuff like that, and now that after my wreck, I had to learn that I do have handicaps, but it doesn't make me unable. It just makes me have to work a little harder, and I'm stubborn enough, so, and I was raised well enough that you don't throw in the towel. And I may throw a fit, but I will get up. And my dad got really, really sick, and I had already hit my 7 years, then eight. And it took a while to figure out he had cancer, he had a regular heart, he had a herniated heart, he had three aneurysms. It was so much. He ended up going into the hospital for 3 days, in December of 2007. And they did it's a three-day process where they basically do like a biopsy. And that's when we found that all out. So he started treatment. He beat the cancer. They were still doing these. He's got done with chemo. He got done with radiation. They were doing like these calcium deposits once a month because he had like this spot in his kidney. They said, let's do that. But he started to get sick again, and he ended up dropping of an embolism on July 16th of 2008. And I held it together because of my mom, but inside I wanted to die. It was the hardest thing I've ever felt, even more than my wreck, because I don't remember my wreck. And I stayed sober through it, but it was drag. They say sometimes quickly, sometimes I was dragging ass. I mean, I was suiting up every day for a meeting. I was letting it out around you guys because I wanted to be strong for my mom. So my mom finally had a hard time. And thank God I had recovery, because I didn't pick up and I didn't kill myself. And there were days I woke up that I wished I didn't. And I got through it because I have these tools of living life and accepting life on life's terms. And, I have a lot of gratitude for the father I've had. He still lives through me. I'm very close to my mom. A lot of years have passed. He's been gone 9 years, and I've managed to work the steps probably 6 times. I just finished them again, and I'm on tradition 12 now. And, life has gotten really, really good. I'm happy. Everyone's like, your whole family moved. Why are you still here? I was like, because I got my own family here now. And it's mostly my program. And I went through a divorce, and I went through different things, and I went through trying to find myself, making some bad choices and finding myself and making better choices and, trying to live life the way deep down I know God wants me to, and an honest life. And I'm so happy now, you guys. My life is at its best, and I couldn't have done it without recovery. I've been able to not just get sober and stay humble through it all, even as each day goes by, but like I've been able to help other people, and not telling them how to live life, but just sharing my experience, strength, and hope, as all those old timers used to say, which used to get on my nerves, but it's true. And the steps, and still working the traditions, and I have all these relationships. I mean, and I have this man I adore that was my friend for years before, and now we're a team. He's my partner, and now we get to, hopefully, we'll have to warm up a seat next to us, but we're having a baby, and it's all by the grace of God. And it just proves to me, because I went through my faith challenge, but you know what recovery did for me at that point? It made me get right back into the keep it simple, do the first 3 steps, and that's what I did. I hung on to that when I doubted God, and I wanted to not wake up. And I brought it back down to the basics, because that's what you do. And so for that, I'm very grateful, and I'm truly blessed. And I just love you guys all. Thank you.